Capital 263.
Welcome to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba.
And I'm Tawanda Henry Beattie.
And I'm Upenyu Makoni Matenga. Welcome to the best political podcast in the multiverse.
Which is what exactly?
Guys.
Sure, some of us last did
science. It's not just one universe. It's many possibilities.
Some of us last did science.
Am I alone in this nerd universe?
Is there a possibility where the goblin is not the president?
Imagine a possibility where he is the president of like everywhere.
What the hell is going on?
We're talking about multiverses, guy. Antin, do you want to raise the issue?
I can't hear you for a solid 30, 45 seconds.
Oh, okay. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. See, well, there was interference from one of the parallel universes.
So anyway, imagine a multiverse where he's like, where Zimbabwe is the equivalent of the United States and he is the leader. Ooh.
You mean Mugabe? Yeah.
No, let's not insult Mugabe like that.
Yes, please don't. Please don't.
Today we have
the 30th of September.
Yes, it's the 30th of September. Oh, such a short month. I don't know. Was September short for anyone else?
Just very short, actually.
Yeah, because you guys are out there, guy. Yeah, it was the longest month of my life.
Oh, jeez, that's so I remember now.
From the fuel queues to the cooking oil shortages.
It was a busy month.
I don't know. You saboteurs
who are... trying to ruin our economy.
Judas Iscariot.
We're working really hard.
Anyway, today we are talking about our president's back. Woohoo! But he's about to leave. Yay.
With what?
So, yeah, we're talking about the president's statements that he made when he came back from New York about Judas Iscariot and economic saboteurs. Then he made another speech at, whose funeral was it?
Was it Maimisika?
Maimisika's funeral.
Former
vice president's wife. And he said something to the effect of, I ain't going nowhere. The seat is
because
mine.
Because of the people.
Yeah. Then we're going to talk about the events with Pastor Ivan Mawarre, who was arrested once again for trying to subvert a constitutionally elected government. Linda Masarra has launched a campaign to run for the Harare seat, so we'll look at that.
Harare Central.
And then there's also parliamentary roundup, which I think we're going to start up or start with what's happening in parliament. And then did I leave anything out? PDP. How could I forget?
I thought you would leave that out completely. But yeah, that's that as well. So yeah, let's start with the parliamentary roundup.
Okay. So this
back
week
to
in
you,
parliament.
You.
Oh, can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, because I'm like, what?
Crossing over to our correspondent in Zimbabwe, Upenyu Makoni.
You're looking. Sure, guys. Somebody please send me a ticket. Major debates in Parliament this week were the Police Association Bill, which was given an adverse report, sexual exploitation of minors, which was a motion raised by Honorable Misia Irambu Mshonga, and then the Minister of Finance and Economic Development responding to questions on cash shortages. So my two favorite quotes from this week in Parliament are Mushonga saying, we cannot have a social welfare system that knows we have orphans that are coming from HIV/AIDS that have absolutely no plan about how to deal with those children, which is very true. They have tabled a motion, or they've adopted a motion, to have the interministerial task force convened by the Minister of Public Service and Labor and Social Welfare come and report and investigate that issue. And then Honorable Dr. Mashakada said on the economy, what the market has told you is that the US dollar is not one-to-one with the bond. That is the message that the market has demonstrated. This is why, if I want to pay my foreign payments, the bank will ask me to supply them with foreign currency. It is a statement that this parity is fallacious. It does not exist. Yeah, that's all I have from Parliament.
Sounds like it was quite an interesting week in Parliament.
It was a very fun week in Parliament.
Seems so, things are picking up, and it's like these guys realize that it's their last sitting before the Parliament is dissolved. So they're trying to, everyone's trying to make a name for themselves. And but I mean, Priscilla's always, Mushira Rabu Inshoma has always been quite vocal, hasn't she?
Yeah, she's very outspoken, which I really enjoy. But it's nice to see other members of parliament, you know, rallying, like, especially on the issue of the sexual exploitation of minors. I mean, even Duna, who I've read the Hansard with and some of his comments, I'm a little bit like, what are you doing with your life? But yeah, it's nice to see them rallying behind an issue which all of us should be concerned about.
Yeah, I think, I think they're bipartisan issues, and this is one of them. And this is one where really, It shouldn't matter who raises the issue, but it's a national issue which all sides need to tackle. And it's great that it's being raised in Parliament, and I hope the Inter-Ministerial Task Force actually puts in work to solve this issue, because really this is for the future of our country. It has nothing to do with who gets to be Zete pa Chigaro.
Yeah.
That's an interesting segue into the goblins, the two speeches. So,
you know, Mati Gari, you need to stop, Shamwari.
Are you getting Mautanga Vunduga?
With your goblin stories, you know, I'm in immediate danger, guys.
Put some respect on the man's name.
I say it as a term of endearment.
Anyway, so our president returned from New York this week, and at the airport, he got back and he was shocked that things had spiraled out of control in his absence. It made no sense to him why there were fuel queues, why people were hoarding cooking oil and other basic commodities. And so he came to the conclusion that this was the work of Judas Iscariot within his government, which I suppose would make him Jesus. And he said that there are economic saboteurs who want to create a situation that would lead to an uprising. I'm paraphrasing here. But basically lead to a situation where the government is overthrown. And these people are within his government and working to do so. Which, at the time, the acting president was Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa. And Professor Moyo subsequently tweeted that the day before the panic buying, ZBC News flighted a story that caused this panic.
True?
Well, they flighted a story on the fact that people were burning money, which they were doing and they have been doing for a while now. So they said that people are burning money. Is this the return of 2008 or 2007? Something along those lines. And he says that induced the panic in the people who then the next day went and started hoarding goods. So the assumption or the case they're trying to present here is that the Lacoste faction is the one which is trying to cause an overthrow of the government. They haven't put it as that yet, but also Professor Moyo, I think, is trying to go back to the information ministry because, you know, he's take ZBC and saying, Kuti, they are being used as part of, you know, the Lacoste agenda. So I think he's going to present this case once again in Politburo the next time he gets a chance to, and make a case for himself to go back. But yeah, that's basically what's happened.
To clarify, it's Professor Moyo jumping on Mugabe's words to create his own narrative.
Yes.
Okay, it's not necessarily Mugabe doesn't agree that ED was the Judas aforementioned in this situation, does he?
Well,
that is yet to be.
Yeah, it's yet to be confirmed because he didn't say who the Judas was. He just said kuti pane ma Judas Iscariot who are economic saboteurs who are trying to create a situation that will then cause the government to be overthrown. But for me, that doesn't make sense because if there happens to be a government being overthrown,
it would involve. But I mean, that being said, and full disclosure, we're moving into the realm of wild speculation. If there was a Judas Iscariot who was acting vice president at the time, and he had made moves to tank the economy so that there would be some sort of government overthrow, would he not also be the type of person who would fly clandestinely to South Africa the day before the principal arrives and have private security firms as opposed to state security firms guarding him while he was in South Africa for perhaps a checkup? Who knows why he was in South Africa the day before on a private personal visit as opposed to an official state visit?
Now this is this is definitely the realm of speculation.
No. Okay. What is fact? What is fact is that Mnangagwa flew to South Africa the day before Mugabe arrived in Zimbabwe, and he flew in his private capacity, not on an official trip.
No, but he was there at the airport when the president came back.
Can we come back to reality, guys?
Okay.
Can we just? Not can we stop smoking the pipe for 1 second? Listen, there's peace in the kingdom. The queues are gone. There's cooking oil on the shelves. So let's come back. Okay, and as far as I know, HE is still the goblin in charge. because the people must know who I'm referring to now.
Yes.
So the goblin in charge is still the goblin in charge. But what I wanted to say was I don't think it was that intentional. I think ZBC was just doing their job. I don't think there was a directive from OPC. I think people did what people do when they're, you know, thinking as a group and they panicked. And I think that's exactly what happened. I don't think there was any – because, you know what, if this was it, we would know. And, yeah. This isn't it.
I mean, the assumption these people are making for me is quite shallow. Or they're looking for, Chagamakudomukomo. You know, it's really one of those situations where we've never had a situation that even comes close to, you know, an overthrow of government. And having been through all of that hyperinflationary period and we didn't get, you know, an actual situation close to it, even this, I can understand the panic, but I don't think it would have led to that, especially in 1 weekend. I don't know, maybe they're looking for an excuse because of the factional wars in ZANU-PF right now. But I think, they are speculating as well, the same way Henry was trying to do here, trying to
make I told you it was speculation, guys.
Apples and oranges. And then in the other speech, the president said, essentially he said, I ain't going nowhere. And aka sarudzwa nevanhu kuti ndiwe pano. And hatidi vanoda kubvuta. Kubvuta chigaro. Ndiri zete pachigaro. I ain't going anywhere because the people chose me. So, yeah, next year, same old, same old. Ndiwo wamugabe, wamugabe. Nawo wamugabe kuma elections, kuma chichi. And you should have seen the... What was interesting was the reaction, because then the ZBC cameras switched to the
ministers.
The G40 faction, who they, you know, the cabal that sits together. And they were ecstatic. You know, I'm sure someone was close to taking off his shirt and swinging it to the... And then
the was about to start twerking.
There's another clip when they're doing a Zorabata. Like, these guys were going in. They were so excited. Yeah, it was the entire G40.
Poor Hungwe, who was sitting in the wrong crowd.
Yeah, just
so this. No, this for anyone who hasn't seen this clip, I'm sure it's doing the rounds right now, and see Hungwe stand up and he looks very uncomfortable. He starts adjusting his shirt and playing with his jacket.
Shame. So G40 is quite excited right now. We can say they are on the up. They were rescued by their knight lady in shining armor, or lady in shining Gucci. I don't know. Does Gucci shine? Anyway,
yes, it does.
She came through for them, and the president seems to be, you know, taking that side for now. So as always, we wait and see what happens. What's going to be interesting is when we get to primaries. That for me is what's going to be very telling about who's in control. Because a lot of people, this is where they can be sidelined. And with this whole youth agenda and Comrade Chipanga saying no seat is uncontested, Tudakuisa my youth and things like that, there really could be a push to get rid of some of that old guard, especially on the faction which is on the losing end right now. So, I don't know.
Well, I welcome that, the getting rid of Deadwood, such as it is.
The whole party is Deadwood.
You know, my only issue
Listen here.
Yeah?
I think change, regardless of, it's incremental, right? And what we essentially want is for this institution that is ZANU-PF to also fundamentally change. So, yes, let's get rid of the Deadwood. Let's get rid of the old people who have brought no new ideas in the last 37 years. And let's see what the young ones are capable of.
But you know why that's a fallacy? Because for me, my biggest problem with ZANU-PF is corruption. And you'd think young ministers like Kasukwere would be less corrupt than their older counterparts. And in fact, the opposite is true. And in fact, they have less of an excuse to be corrupt because they didn't fight the war. They don't have that entitlement. So their corruption is even doubly as bad. So I don't see how a younger ZANU-PF, which hasn't escaped the clutches of corruption, is good for the country. Because, fine, they might move away from violence and the things that the older generation knows, but that disease of corruption and that zanification of all the issues in the country will still be there. You look at psychology, Mzeusa has already been in two corruption scandals in the space, and he's only been an MP for less than 2 years, and he's already been involved in two of these corruption scandals. So for me, if I understand the need for push for young people, but if ZANU-PF attracted the type of young people that were immune to those calls, then yes, but you're really having a more perpetuation of the same. And in fact, it's even I'm afraid of it, because they're even more energetic, and we can have another 37 years of the same ZANU-PF with essentially the same disease.
And my issue with it is people are coming in on a patronage system. So it won't be young people coming in on the merit. You're essentially forcing candidates on certain constituencies, and you're putting in your own people. So these people will be beholden to you. And basically, they will do what you ask, which doesn't work at the end of the day. So you've essentially got the same situation that you had back in, I don't know, 1980, if you want, or maybe after that, 1982, after there was this first purge of individuals, and you've got guys who really they owe you for being where they are, and you're getting more of the same. But we'll see what happens when the primaries come round.
Yeah. Well, I agree with everything that you guys said, but like I said, it's incremental. So you have to start somewhere. And I'm one of the people who believe in burning the field first before you plant. So let's
see. That's why we get rid of the whole of Zan. Scotch stitch.
Someone who has been accused of a scotch tape policy is none other than Pastor Ivan Mawarire. He's been accused yet again of trying to get rid of the whole of ZANU illegally, unconstitutionally, by trying to subversively by trying to subvert a constitutionally elected government. This law is the funniest law in one of them.
I think we should start calling it the Pastor E law.
In its application, I mean, it's a serious law. You can't do that. So you can't have a coup. But it's in its application. When was it? On Saturday. Yeah, because we missed it.
Yeah, in fact, it was just after we recorded.
Yeah. Mm. So on Saturday, Pastor E went round and he went to different fuel queues and he made another video talking about all the fuel queues he went to. And basically, he said, "Ah, guys, is ya zite." Then on Saturday evening, he made a longer video where he called for three things. He said, people need to... Those who pray need to pray more, need to organize prayer meetings. The second thing was we need to have peaceful protests or demonstrations or that sort of thing. The Homwe Panze campaign is one such, you know, where people are not going out into the streets and rioting.
They're just going about their daily lives with their pockets turned out to show that they have no money.
That's the Homwe Panze campaign.
Yeah.
Basically it was calling for peaceful process and demonstrations. And the third thing was that people register to vote. On Sunday, our very astute police officers went to his place of worship where he was mid-sermon and arrested him. They went and they arrested him at church. And it was quite an interesting week. So on Monday, he was due in the High Court on the charges. Last year's charge or this year's charges of trying to subvert a constitutionally elected government. So he couldn't go to his bail hearing. On Tuesday, he was due back in the High Court, but they postponed it to Thursday because he had to go to the bail hearing for the Sunday arrest because there's a 48-hour window. Tuesday, actually, they missed the 48-hour window, so he's let off. Wednesday, I think he had to go to the hearing to do with the UZ or
UZ.
Back to... Yeah, the UZ. Yeah.
It was the UZ.
It was the UZ. That's when they said that one of the state witnesses said that Pastor E called for non-violence. And then the state witness said, well, that was a code for violence.
What?
Yeah, so they showed a video.
What? I don't understand.
So they showed a video.
They said he's using a code word. When Pastor Evan says non-violence, it's a code word to incite his followers to violence.
Yeah.
So does this mean when he says, I'm very unhappy with the government, it means he's very happy with the government?
Opposite day. Basically, it was opposite day. And what you say is, you know, not what you actually mean. You mean the opposite. And then he went on to say that that his church, he formed his church to indoctrinate people, and it's a terrorist cell akin to Boko Haram. Anyway, then they played a video of Pastor E at the UZ, and he was non-violent, and I think he prayed as well. and was quoting scripture, and so he was let off. And then there was another charge, I think, on another day, but I'm not sure how that one went. So I don't know if he's been let off all of them or just two of them, and I think there's one.
I think it's the UZ one is gone, and I think last year's one he's been acquitted. And then there's just this Saturday, which is still to go, but he's on bail for that, pretty much, is where my understanding. They had a 37-page charge sheet on that. And then
the evidence is ridiculous.
And then Harrison Cuomo, who's lawyer, then asked, could he, in that 37 pages, is there a single case of someone associated with a this flag person, as you say, being violent, an instant of it? And the state had to concede that there wasn't. So it's, I don't know.
He should sue them for wasting his time. That's what he should do. He should sue the detective chief inspector who testified. Yes, for wasting his time. He should sue the state also for wasting his time. Because, I mean, if you are bringing a person up, this is a very, very serious charge. Is the punishment not life imprisonment or death? Yeah, is it not one of those? Yes. And these spurious because this is all it is. It's spurious allegations that essentially an entire department cooked up. I would, you know, over a bottle of Chibuku, I think. And, you know, How do you write 37 pages with not even a single shred of real evidence? I'm not a lawyer, but even I can tell you that that's stupid.
No, that's, I don't know who has a hard on for him, for lack of a better word, because very often it doesn't seem logical for the state to actually give him this amount of their effort and their time, because it's actually raising his profile higher than it's been in a while. I mean, for all intents and purposes, over the last 6 months, he had sort of faded away in terms of the limelight, in as far as that's concerned. So, you know, now, but now this arrest outside his church, I don't know who does, they're just the optics of it. You're arresting a pastor after he's just finished preaching to his people. You know, that is biblical level, you know, symbolism, like genuinely.
Let me speculate here. And this episode might just be called the speculation episode. I think they are trying to do so in a way, and push him into a political lane and make him choose to run, and that would further put the opposition sides the opposition in disarray, because I don't see, whilst it's prudent, I don't see them entering a coalition, or him entering a coalition with, you know, the major opposition alliance. And so depending on what happens, I mean, if you have Pastor E running in a Harare constituency, he's likely to go up. What constituent does he live in? Harare West, not Jesse.
Yeah. Not Jesse Majome, guys.
You see,
don't take Jesse away from us.
Actually, you wouldn't be able to beat Jesse.
There's that type of thing there. So I think they really want him to go political and throw a spanner into that opposition environment works, because there's no way he's going into the alliance. The alliance doesn't suit him, exist. I say.
But does the alliance itself
did you say exist?
No, I didn't.
That's what I was saying. But I was going to ask that.
It was picked up on the monitor.
Before we go, there was interference from a parallel universe. but I mean, before we go into our alliance, we might as well talk about the other, you know, people who have announced. I mean, it seems like a perfect segue to to talk about these activists come politicians, because Linda has just announced that she's running as an independent in Harare Central, which is a seat currently held by the MDC.
Zwizwai, right?
And yes, Zwizwai, Murisi, I think. I don't know how to pronounce his first name.
Yeah.
Who is not a terribly active member of parliament. Then again, I don't know really where you build a well in Harare Central, what generally people see as being active. As a PDP member, she's decided to run as an independent. And there's been speculation as to why she did that.
You'll tell us later.
maybe I will, but I mean, yeah, so she's Together We Can is her campaign catchphrase and slogan, and her campaign color is purple. So now we have blue, yellow, purple, blue, yellow, and purple. We almost have, oh, you know what? I was going to say we almost have all of the Teletubbies, but I realized that it's going to come across as...
Okay, first of all, I object, purely
just because of the colors.
No, I agree with you. I think, so, you know, the blue and the purple, for me, it speaks to a lack of imagination, because essentially they're not mimicking, but they're following the same rules as Fadzai. And isn't the whole point to make your own rules if you're running as an independent and if you're saying I'm different?
So this is where...
they're independent.
No, this is where the chief strategist comes in, ka? Mm. Yes.
Steve Bannon, Gordon son.
expect
us.
Expect us. He told you guys. He said expect us. He didn't say expect me. Who is the us? So I mean, this has been clear for a long time. I think he even mentioned it on our podcast, or AC mentioned it as well. And they've been working with a lot of these independent candidates, or they are working with them. Not saying that they are forcing. Yeah, I'm not saying that they are, pulling the strings directly or making person move, controlling them. But they are, or he is part of their teams. So they, I don't know about the colors really, though. It's an interesting thing, you know, colors and campaigns and how that all relates. I think we're going to have so many colors come next year, because,
you know,
Pachawanda Futi Mamwe, my independent candidates,
But you know that the color thing is not unique to Zimbabwe. In Kenya, it got so bad that the coalition ended up being called the Rainbow Coalition.
It's true.
That's what happened. They called it the Rainbow Coalition because
just look at our own coalition. There's MDC in red, PDP in orange, MDCN I think in green. Yeah, Jacob in blue.
So you're definitely going to have
a lot of colors.
But the colors don't say anything about the candidate. And that's actually my problem with this lack of creativity. Because, yes, you can release a manifesto, but, you know, I have to find it, download it, and read it. Whereas for me, it's about the slogan. Because if you say, yes, we can, whose campaign was that?
Together we can.
Yes, but it's also what I saw was the purple campaign for Harare Central. That tells me nothing about what Linda stands for.
You're exactly right, Rupenyu, is because in Harare Central, you need to associate purple with Linda. And when you vote or when you wonder where purple, you know who to Linda. If there's a lot of purple, then you know who to Linda. That's all that's about the colors. That's why yellow is so striking color as well. That's why red is chosen as well. It's about being visible in the constituency.
It's about optics, not issues. And isn't that a problem? Because then what you're saying is I'm voting for Linda because she's purple, not because, and my friend is purple, not because of what Linda is campaigning, the platform she's campaigning.
The purple issue is, you see, politics is number one. I mean, elections are a numbers game, but also it's an identification thing, which is why upper's colors don't work, because they're very bland and they can get lost easily in a crowd.
But everything about upper is bland.
That's true. Anyway, Titch will get very upset if we say bad things about upper. So you want colors that stand out so that you are easily identifiable.
And it looks like Munewa Nokawande, if you've got 12 purple shirts, it makes it looks like there's a lot of people. I don't think it's necessarily... go ahead.
My only question is, you know, is in the selection of colors is what colors work, what colors don't work, what colors... what colors show what you're about or... show, you know, inspire confidence or and that sort of thing. Like I said, upper's colors really are very bland and they make it look very boring. Purple is an interesting color.
The color of royalty, isn't it?
Yes it is. Mm-hmm. So purple, I've never gone into the colors and campaigns, which is an interesting topic actually. So speaking on Linda, so she's chosen to run in Harare Central, which is, it's a pretty big constituency in terms of the people that reside there. All of the avenues are in there, and I think it stretches to the border of Newlands and on the other side, Milton Park. And there are a lot of issues that are within that area. I mean, it is very close to the CBD. The CBD is actually part of that constituency as well. So I don't know, you know, how it's going to go. I think she's going up against a Joao as well.
Yeah, Robert.
Jason. Robert. Who's Robert Joao?
The older brother of Patrick.
Is he the one who used to own... or who still owns Red Fox?
Kwemarasta, yes. Ah, that guy.
He gave us many good names.
Vote Robert Schwab.
No.
For even better nights going into
and it's Zita Rebenzi twice over.
Wow. Anyway, so she'll be up against Robert Joao and I suppose Zizwai as well. This for me is one of the issues why I had doubts with the coalition, because I think I mentioned it on this podcast, is that Linda was part of PDP or is still part of PDP, but she's chosen to run as an independent. One of the speculation or rumors was that PDP said that she should wait for proportional representation. And not contest, you know, Sirai Madara is what Kuda posted. You see, in the coalition, let me just finish.
Yeah.
In the coalition, this is what I feared, is that you'd have, when the division of seats happens, you then have people who are not happy with it, and then they decide to run as independents anyway. And I completely understand if this was the case, why Linda did it. And I'm not sure what the details are within the PDP. We'll get to that just now. But I don't think this case will be the only one. I think there will be other candidates as well who decide, why have I been snubbed? I can go it alone. And I'm just going to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose we might as well just get into it. I think for Linda's, my understanding of Linda's seats, and this is from speaking to the national organizing, Mulius Madzimure, from the PDP, is that the coalition seats arrangements are still ongoing. So that hasn't even happened yet. But even then, it was unlikely that MDCT was likely to give up a sitting MP's parliamentary seat to PDP. And in that case, the PDP said that if Linda was part of the parliamentary candidates and was a good candidate, would be given a seat in the proportional representation way. And that's just the nature of a coalition. It's got nothing to do with the fact that she's a woman. Even if it was a man running in that constituency, they were not going to get that seat and they would not stand it. And that's generally what happens in a coalition, is they're going to be winners and losers. So while I support Linda's decision to run as an independent, I think that a lot of people don't understand what it means to actually enter into a coalition, is that you don't go into a coalition because you're strong. You go into a coalition because all parties have acknowledged their weakness and they think that there's strength in numbers. And the ultimate thing that a coalition needs is sacrifice. And a lot of people are going to have to sacrifice their pride, their ego, and their positions, because not everyone can win. And in fact, it shouldn't even be about winning. It should be about what's best for the country. And not everyone can negotiate for every individual seat, and people have to compromise and lose and win. So yeah, she was going to definitely be a victim of that, and breaking away from that early saved the PDP some embarrassment later on, because at least that's one battle that doesn't need to be fought. And it wasn't an acrimonious split. It's not like she left acrimoniously. It was well acknowledged that this is what she needed to do for herself. And there's no bad blood in as far as any of the leadership that I've spoken to and Linda. So yeah, that's just how it went. That's just how it's always going to go, and there's nothing we can do about that unless there was a situation where there were going to be primaries in the coalition. And even then, if there was primaries in the coalition, Linda wouldn't win in Harare Central, because primaries are voted on primarily by what? By members of parties. And who's the biggest member of, which is the biggest party in Harare? The MDC.
Indeed.
I do think, looking at it, you know, from the outside, because to be fair, I think what she's doing is very bold, but I don't necessarily think that she will succeed, because as you rightly say, the MDC is the biggest party in Harare. MDCT, sorry, is the biggest party in Harare. And with the muscle of that party behind their candidate, I think it's a worthwhile attempt, but we'll see Linda in 2023.
I just, as you pointed out, Henry, I just fear that this could become a trend, or could happen in a lot more constituencies, and then the coalition will then be splitting its own vote, so to speak. Because you're essentially running against yourselves, opening I still think they'd win certain constituencies, but at the same time, you're weakening your position. And as you mentioned, there are winners and losers, and it should be a case of putting the nation first. But I think the way the terms of this alliance were negotiated, and some of the things of how it started, especially at the leadership level, it became personal issues of, I am the best candidate because ndini ndinevanhu, or I am the best candidate because ndini ndinemari. And it wasn't, I am the best candidate for Zimbabwe, or other leaders saying, and I'm speaking specifically here between Tsvangirai and Joyce, because I think they were the biggest contenders for the presidency of the alliance. And because that fell off, and it seems, I think you were the one, Henry, who said we're likely to have two coalitions going into 2018, a Tsvangirai one and a Mujuru one. There hasn't been sacrifice. I mean, Welshman, there was no way he was going to run and win a presidential election. Anyone else who joined, I don't think they have the muscle to do so. So the only contender was Mujuru, and she's now on her own, and I don't know if she will join at the end of the day. So the rest of the alliance, I think, will follow that same pattern of I am the best candidate because Ndini Ndinevanhu, or I am the best candidate because of XYZ. And it's happening with the situation in Bulawayo or Matabele land, where with Kupe and, is it Gordon Moyo?
Gordon Moyo, yeah.
Gordon Moyo, and there's one more person. And Welshman Ngube as well, when it comes to the seats being allocated there. Everyone seems to want to. I mean, there's no negotiations of, guys, let's actually do this for the best. It's, I am the best candidate on Ndini Ndinevanhu, so I should have all the seats.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. Hopefully, I mean, it's a developing story, so hopefully maybe we can have someone on to help us with it. But I'm not going to handle the situation with Kid Glove. There have been accusations of regionalism, tribalism, and counter-accusations of regionalism and tribalism going flying left, right, and center. Now, my question as a political commentator, which is what we're doing now, as a person looking at a situation, if someone says that Matabeleland needs certain votes, and I am the gatekeeper of Matabeleland, and then I describe them as a regionalist politician, or as someone who is focused on a particular tribe, or is gaining their power base from a particular tribe, how am I being tribalist, or how am I being regionalist, when that's the stance that someone has taken? If your principle, the principle you're standing on to not join a coalition is based on the treatment of a particular regional group, how is that not being regionalist? I'm at a loss to see as to why people are being accused of being tribalist by describing what's happening as being regional. It's like, I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, I get you. I think how to put this in words. I think there's a lot of traditional issues that lie with the Matabeleland and province, with the history of this country, but also in terms of their influence in political affairs and political spaces. So it's always a case of, people from Matabeleland are always relegated to vice positions and that sort of thing. And then with what happened within the MDC of Kupe, of Tsvangirai then appointing Mudzurie and Chamisa when Kupe was there already, that became a regional issue. It became a regional issue.
Chris, can I correct you there?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't an issue. If it was an issue at the time, she would have said something.
Fair enough.
When Mudzurie and Chamisa were appointed over a year ago.
Yeah, over a year ago.
Before the MDC alliance was formed.
Okay, it was
before the alliance was even discussed.
It was made to be.
An issue then.
Yeah, no. It was made to seem by commentators to be a regional issue, right? And so what's I'm trying to understand what's actually happening there, and why there isn't some sort of agreement, or why there can't be, why one person has to come out the winner, and why there can't be a division of seats or whatever it is in that area, or why the negotiations have broken down to such a level. But it's really worrying that the alliance, or that constituency, which traditionally has been an opposition constituency, has gone this far down the road, and there's no agreement there. I don't know what can be done or what needs to be done, but it seems that everyone there is interested in self and interested in consolidating their own power base rather than the increasing the power of the alliance.
Yeah, so I don't know, Benyu, if you have anything to add, but
You know what? I have nothing to say about the MDC Alliance because I feel like in the past episodes I've made my feelings very clear about the MDC and anything MDC led. So yeah, okay, good luck to you. I hope you get it together so you can legitimize the PF in the next election. That's all I have to say.
She's voting apathy.
No, my vote is my secret. Mm. I'm still looking at my options. But yeah, they just need to contest and, yeah, so we can move past the election. As for this nonsense, every year, every election cycle, there's nonsense. So, yeah, okay. Get it together because we need a legitimate election to do things in this country.
We do on the case of Gordon Moyo and the PDP split, or like we said, it's once again politicians from Matabele, and last week Gordon Moyo announced a coalition with Dumisa Dabengwa and Mai Mujuru. After that coalition was announced, the president's office, the PDP president's office, TB's office, sent out a call for a general council meeting on the 29th, Friday, the 29th of September. On the 28th of September, Gordon Moyo announced that he had fired Tendai Biti as president of the PDP following a general council meeting which was held in Blueo, and this announcement was made at Sipepankomo's residence in Blueo. Sipepankomo, who, if you remember, was PDP vice president and then went to Joyce Mujuru and is now, I don't know if he's vice president, I don't know what position he has in Joyce Mujuru's party. But yes, no, for such a devout Seventh-day Adventist, he's a prostitute. subsequently, the general council meeting that was called on the 29th didn't happen. And surprisingly, there was not a round of counter firings or counter expulsions. The general council resolved that the drunk comrades have been given time to sober up and come to their senses. In the meantime, while they're doing that, interim leaders have been selected in their positions. And, of course, you know, they didn't even speak about the purported firing of a party president at a general council meeting that wasn't fully constituted. But basically what it is a mess, and it's a very disappointing mess because I know personally how hard some people or certain people have been fighting for a coalition. I know personally how proud some of these people are, and for such a proudful and egotistical and arrogant man to say, yes, we're under Kwa Morgan, yes, we need to work under Tsvangirai, it takes a lot, and I personally am saying Tendai is one of the most arrogant people I've ever met in my life, and you can hear it by his speech and how he refers to Chinamasa as a villager. So for him to be able to say, I'm going to work under Morgan after what happened with Morgan, and to take a subservient position in that situation, all in the interest of unity, it was a disappointing situation. But I mean, conversely, of course, there's the other side where people believe that, you know, any alliance or any situation that the MDC wins, people are going to want him as finance minister, and that's all he wants, so he's willing to burn his whole party for that. I don't know. I personally, I'm biased. I don't see that as the case. But yeah, I don't know. It's, for me, it was just disappointing, and Dabo, I'm done with with alliance politics now. He's one of the few people, if he ran as an independent in Harare East, he could end up running and winning in Harare East there. So I don't know. It's
I don't know.
Well, maybe we need more independent candidates. Maybe the party system is what's failing us currently.
With a, and then he gets a, and then he chooses another color, green, to make the last Teletubby.
Orange.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want him to be orange.
Again, yes. Because yellow is that baby in the sky, isn't it? You know, the leader of them all. The sunshine, the ray of hope.
Okay, now we know how you guys spent your youth.
So with this PDP situation, what I found interesting is that it's always the president who gets fired, and then the guys who remain who keep the name of the party. I don't know if it will happen with this PDP situation, but it happened to my Mujuru. She was fired from a party, and then she had to give up Zimpi.
Her name.
Changirai was, well, I don't know what happened. Nana Walshman. Well, they split, but Walshman took the name, and Changirai had to add a T to his. I don't know what it is, though. Why they must be this?
Because generally, secretary generals are the secretaries or the organizational centers of the party. So what happens is that any documentation, vehicles, ownership, and things like that generally are kept by the secretary general.
Okay.
Except in the MDC situation, after Walshman left, they actually took away powers from the secretary general. But generally, what is meant to happen, and it's a good system in a place where you have people that retire, because the secretary general is the organizational strength and the president is the political strength. And, you know, vice president's actually second in charge or third in the line. But what it does is it ends up creating two centers of power. And that's why you see so many president secretary general splits. So you might, you know, it might be worth considering a one center of power party organizational structure like ZANU to avoid splits.
Sakapana Babatiri Secretary General Ndiani.
Dinesh. I don't know why you're even asking these questions.
No.
So foolishly. Shall I explain?
I think Upeti is president.
Usango tisa chete ni chini.
I see you, Tawad. Trying to make yourself Secretary General. Anyway, I broke no disobedience.
But on that issue, I think it's so sad how there's so much factionalism everywhere. Like
even within the factions.
even within the factions. But it's crazy how every single political party is facing such a crisis. It shows me that the issues are not being put forward in any of the political parties. It's all about the individuals, and it's all about it just shows how many egotists we actually have in our political space and what our political space has become. It's become so much about personalities and about what is and about entitlement, where people think that they are owed something, or that because I've been here the longest, I should be the one, or that because, I don't know, I come from a certain background, I should be the one championing this cause. And at the end of the day, the people that suffer are the people themselves, the majority, though, the masses of Zimbabwe, because we don't have their interests at the fore. We're not looking at issues of, you know, what it takes to, or it's not being discussed more than the other issues of what needs to be done to solve our economic problems, the issues of, healthcare and child welfare. All of these things are relegated to two or three lines in, you know, at rallies, but they're not being discussed holistically, and engagement is not happening with the people on, you know, what what are their problems and what can be done in the immediate to solve some of those things, and what's going to take a lot longer, what we need if, you know, an opposition party comes to office, what needs to be set first on the agenda, what do we sacrifice? Because at the end of the day, if Zimbabwe is going to change, it's not going to happen overnight, and it's not going to be a smooth process. There's going to be a lot of pain. Some things need to be put on the back burner, so to speak. Some things need to be sacrificed for there to be something concrete at the end. And these things just are not being discussed in the way that they should. And even us, yeah, we spend our days talking about factionalism and things like that, because that's what's happening in the political arena. It would be interesting if we could be discussing policy issues, which, you know, I hope some of these parties start putting out manifestos so that we can actually dig into them.
Yeah, Chris, you know, I think time is going, so maybe last words from all of us. But you know what's really, really, really sad is that none of these opposition parties actually have a seat. They don't have any power. They're fighting over over imaginary or supposed future gains. So can you see how high the stakes are and what people are doing now? Can you imagine there actually was a cabinet to choose, or, you know, positions to fill? Now imagine how much disunity and discord there would be. So it's even, for me, what it's really shown is that we need to consider even their capacity, at least some of them, their capacity to be in power, because I'm saying money, you're calling shotgun, urusamunu front seat kombi, sadiashiga.
It's like that thing Marshall posted. I don't know if it was in the group or on Facebook, about two guys walking in the street, and they say, "Tikanunga 50 cents traitor say," and the one guy says, "Tutenga loaf, tutenga bread," and then they go fighting over, you know, buying this bread, and someone meets them in the street, and they're like, "Kumurku rirachi," and he says, "Murku rirachingwa." Then they're like, "Chingwa chacho chiripi," and they say, "Atisata tenga." Then they say, "Ko mariacho iripi," because atisata nonga.
Yeah. So
listen, yeah, party politics has failed the parties themselves, and it's failed the people. And ultimately, the goal here, even the goal of elections, is to have a government or a system of government that responds to the will of the people. Is that correct? So, and this is where I think maybe a person, I admire the independent candidates, because they're seeing that this is not working. In the end, you're fighting for, you know, positions, you're jostling for power that you, in essence, do not have. And it's a lot of rhetoric and not a lot of doing. I just wanted to point anybody listening to a TED Talk, a TED Talk by Eric Exley called The Tale of Two Political Systems. And basically he's talking about how the Chinese government is, in some ways, it's, you could call it responsive authoritarianism. And he's, you know, saying a multi-party democracy is not necessarily the only way to govern. But I would apply that to our case here, where, you know, our institutions don't listen. Our institutions are not for the people. They're just to maintain, you know, that one center of power. And perhaps for us all going into an election, it's worthwhile thinking about when I'm voting and what am I voting for, and, you know, who am I voting for, versus just purple. And this is my core objection to the whole color thing, purple, blue and yellow, because that's not why we're doing this. The reason why we're doing this is because we want a government that responds and listens to us at the end of the day.
Fair enough. Inini nda taura shakawandisa, so I'm good. I don't know. Anyone else?
No, I think we can call that the speculation episode, and I'm sure you, our listeners, are looking forward to guests, and we do have a few things lining up. We have some guests by Skype, other people who we haven't been able to get. So I think that in the next few weeks or so, we should be able to get some people. So yeah, thanks for listening. I am Tawande Henry, and yeah, this is Capital 263.
Indeed.
Free to say it.
Cool. Everyone else hasn't signed out and you just want to wrap up.
I know. He's just rushing us to the
wow,
end. He's trying to make
wow,
himself Secretary General.
Wow.
Comrade, hey, you're fired. You're fired. I will be issuing a as soon as we have signed off.
There will be some group. I'm in Osako.
You need to go to move. Don't form a group around the game.
All members joining this group
with me.
Be excommunicated.
You start
no,
calling
you
yourselves. You start calling yourselves communications and above.
Anyway, my name is Chris Charaba. You can find me at Chris Charaba on all social media. Follow our Twitter page, Poly and Beyond ZW, Beyond Poly ZW on Facebook as well.
My name is Upenyu Makoni Matenga. I'm Upenyu Makoni everywhere. Please like our Facebook page, comment, share your thoughts with us on Facebook. It's, what is it on Facebook?
Beyond Poly ZW.
Yeah, Beyond Poly ZW. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
Now you can sign.
Yeah.
And you have my permission.
See you. Bye. And now.
Capital 263.